anyway, I noticed then, there's where I first learned, when I told my father, I'd known some Irish people around there, men. And I took a liking to these people. And I told my father, why is it that I like the Irish so much? Maybe because they're Catholics. I'd heard they were Catholics. And these were travelers through, and they weren't local people there. Oh, yeah, there was one Irish family, the Kennedys, Bill Kennedy. Oh, I loved him and his sisters and his mother. And I used to go work, lead a horse farm, cultivating, just to help my father. He'd give me a dollar. And they'd give me a lunch or something, cakes and some little thing. They know that I didn't get it home. We had cows, dairy, more or less, small ones. And my father and my brother and I used to milk the cows, and I'd go deliver the milk at the dairy place where they separated the cream from the milk. How much that produced, I don't know. We had a lot of chickens, had some pigs. My stepmother, finally, I heard him talking, that she was tired of the ranch after she'd been taking care of my father and having a bar at the bedtime. She was a city woman, too. She'd been living in Los Angeles when my father met her. So they had an agreement. And she was going to leave and get back to the city. And my father didn't have nothing. He says, all I have is this heifer. You can get a buggy or some way and you can lead it, a young heifer. Beautiful. She took that heifer, her produce, what she produced, was produced money for me to bury, pay doctor bills and bury my father many, many years later. Now, she had made a deal with my father when Antonia is 11 or 12, I'll come back, you live. Look me up, come back, and I'll raise her. This is an agreement between them. It wasn't a fight or anything. She left. She went back to the city, but she came to Downey, over here in Downey, and when we found her again, my father found her, and I went after to move her to Goma with her. My sister had grown up. In fact, my father had taken my sister and left her with her. And then later, when she was going to move back, she was a regular old farm girl. Chickens! I had a wagon load of chickens and a whole bunch of cows I was leading behind the wagon when I went after her. And like I say, these cows that she had, the original heifer, she'd had, I don't know how many cows, it was several years later. See, my sister was around five. Around five when they separated. And she was 12. When they got together again. And she finished raising my sister. She died in my arms, the old lady did. She didn't like me at all or my older sister. Not at all. She never let me go hungry, kept me clean all the time, but I never heard one kindly word out of her. A pleasant word. It was always just orders. Do this, do that, do that. That little woman, I don't think she weighed more than 90 pounds. And she had the smallest feet of any woman I've ever seen. She bought the smallest shoes she could find in the store and then stuffed them with cotton. She had hair that every few months she had to trim. She wore braids. She had to trim because it dragged on the floor. And when she's walking on the wooden floor, you could hear her anyplace. Feet pounding down. She was positive about everything she did. Tough. And I finally had her. When she finally left me alone, she was going to come after me with a stick. And I don't know whether I was hot-headed. I'd been tired of taking things from people. And I wasn't going to take anymore from her. But she was unreasonable in some cases. I got scolded from my father. No reason at all, just because she said once. The only time she hit me was with her two little fists in the back of my back. I was taller than she was then, around 8, 9. For me to go out in a field, a 10-acre field, and we had a well out there to fill a trough. Well, it was my duty, and I used to go do it without being told. And she wanted to send me out of there to go fill that trough. I filled the trough. She wouldn't let me go fill that trough. I tell you, Father, go fill that trough. Father, go fill that trough. And as I went out the door, she hit me in the back with a little fist like that. And I was mad. Boy, cursing a blue streak. Now, mind you, what was it? I don't know, going through a barley field just behind the house, the barn, the little trail I had, going through this barley field to go to the... I had to go out there anyway, but it was full of water. I had filled it up. We had to draw it with a bucket, a rope and bucket. And I was cussing that woman. I had learned to cuss good by then, hearing teamsters and what have you. And of course, in front of my father and grown up people, I didn't do it. But here alone I was. All of a sudden, somebody, something, hit me in the hiney. A hard one that stung. It scared me. I turned around, not a soul. I thought it maybe my brother had caught up with me or my sister and heard me cussing. Hit me. And I tell you, I started praying. I still hadn't got over those scares that they gave me about the devil and God and all that, you know. Well, so I shut up. I started praying instead of cussing and looking over my shoulder all the time. Twice that happened to me. Another time, a spank. This is going back to 1905, when they took me out of school and we were picking grapes. My brother and sister, Edith and Frank, were picking. They sent me down to a neighboring ranch farm where they were pumping water to irrigate. And it was a big pipe flowing in a deep hole, concrete. And I wanted to get in water. I had an affinity for water. I wanted to go swimming. There's a big grove of walnut trees and some wild hay, volunteer barley and oats. And the house from the place with the pump couldn't have been over 300-400 feet. I could see windows through the trees and what have you. So I took my clothes off. I had filled the jug, took my clothes off, and I was creeping over so they wouldn't see me. I was going to go jump in this hole. And I could. I didn't know anything about swimming, and this hole was pretty darn deep. Well, I was creeping along. Whack! I didn't know. That made me jump quick. Like you said sometime back about what this Indian had said, your ancestors, one of your ancestors were with you all the time. It couldn't be. Something. I'm pretty sure that if I jumped in that water would have rolled me underneath. I never got out. I had drowned it. But anyway, I put my clothes on in a hurry and took it up. I never said nothing to my brother and sister. Well, the end of this is, all this that I'm telling you is, there's a few other things that I'd go to school short spells. After my stepmother left, things began to go wrong with my father. The following year, after this 10 acres, he made $800. He went in big for cabbage, and he only sold $36 worth. So we had to move again. We moved into a tent. Couldn't rent a home even. And that's when my father's arm was in bad shape. He couldn't work. Well, we moved into another place over not far from Los Alamitos the Bixby, one of the Bixby, well, this was private. There was some 20 acres there was private. But on the other side was Bixby's pastures. We had a lot of cattle. Flowing wells, and a butcher used to come over there to kill them there. He'd got permission. He'd buy a steer from Bixby and then he'd kill it and butcher it there. Well, there's a young man there who had been working on the railroad in 1906, and they run that Pacific Electric from Los Angeles all through Stanton, and run diagonally across the country, and ended up in Balboa. And I remember that on Saturdays and Sundays there were as many as 5 cars hooked together, and every 30 minutes they were going by. How much people traveled in those by streetcars, and during the weekend, about every 30 minutes, there was a streetcar. And every mile, or every cross street, there was a little shed there where people were in a shed, and benches where you could sit and wait. And you flagged the car down, they'd stop. My brother and I was beginning to learn to ride, and we had an old gray horse. And we were riding out, and the horse took a notion to run one time, and took the bit, and run, and my brother was riding a roan with my horse. They had bought that horse with, indirectly, with my money that I had earned on the hay bearer, driving the horses around for 75 cents a day and my board. I bought an old mare. My father fattened it, teamed it up with another one, and sold them for $100. And I told him that $100 is $50 of that mine. I used to talk up to my dad. No, he says, I'll buy you another horse. He came in with another horse on just one good leg, limping. Beautiful horse, but could hardly walk, leading him in. He says, there's your horse. He did it on purpose. That horse can't even walk. That isn't right. Oh, yeah, he's going to be a good horse. 3 months after he cured it, took care of it, and straightened it out, they offered him $200 for that horse. I heard him say that horse came all the way from Wyoming. He had a lot of brands on him. But one was a Wyoming brand, and he knew all these brands, you know. That horse is either a very good horse or no good. But he turned out to be one of the best horses. We kept him till we pensioned him, and he'd been pensioned 2 weeks when he died. My dad said he died of a broken heart because we got rid of him. I don't know. He knew horses better than I did. But by that time, when that horse, I learned to really love horses. Before that, working Sugar Beach, you worked horses hard, and it was hard on them, but you fed them. I remember many a winter, we did nothing but beans and tortillas without any, or biscuit without any shortening or nothing. And in order to feed the horses, grain them. But it was hard work for them, and that was our living. 8 years we worked sugar beets, worked for the landowner and the sugar factory until I finally told my father, I'm through with this. That was many years later. But anyway, I was 12 years old, going to school, passed from the 4th to the 5th. Imagine a 12-year-old boy who should have been over in the 6th to the 7th grade. And this is where I lost faith in the Anglo, my teacher. This happened that I was telling you. Was it not even on this? Did we?
No.
No, we didn't put that where the teacher was. They were hanging me? Okay. Well, anyway, my father pulled me out of school. I passed to the 5th and pulled me out of school. I had a box of books that had belonged to my brother. In this place where we'd been living, where the butcher used to come, my sister decided to get married. She was only 15. My father fought it, but the judge convinced him. Might as well let her go. Then my brother, a year later, went to a ball game. My father had got a contract harvesting sugar beets. My kid sister and I, for about 3 weeks, we fed 14 men. We were the cooks, my kid sister and I. And then this old Indian that we had met when I was around 8 years old, Kunaka, he came over. I don't know if my father found out where he was and sent word to him to come over. And he was an alcoholic, well-educated Indian. He's the one that taught me to read and write Spanish. I was just 10 years old. Well, he took over the kitchen. Well, we'd done a lot of the work for my sister and I. But he took over the kitchen. There were some pretty tough boys there.
This was 1912?
Oh, no. Oh, this was 1908 to 1909. I was around 11 years old. Not quite 11 yet. And on these sugar beet deals. My brother went to a ball game on a Sunday, and he came back around 4 years later, and he came back married. Well, I remember that when he came back home, what the first thing my father said, that was sure a long ball game. Well, anyway, this was up to 1910 when I was going to school. I was 12 years old. 1909 when I learned to read and write Spanish. And they had given my brother, a neighbor had given my brother a lot of books. History and geography was one of my favorites, and I had read, I don't know how many times I read Robinson Crusoe book. They were big books, wide books. And then Stanley's Travels in Africa. I'd read that through two or three times. There's a lot of words I didn't understand, but in repetition, I began to learn. TV taught me how to pronounce a lot of words and the meaning of a lot of words. So I've done a lot of reading, and I still do. Every day I do some reading. This is one of my favorites, just to pass the time. Reader's Digest. And I always turn to Life in the United States first. Yeah. After. Then I go to the heavier stuff. And some of the stories that they write here, they have in the larger books, you know. We have quite a few of them at home. But I had boxes full of them. But anyway, I'd come home from the field, do my chores, take care of my horses, and immediately I grab a book, start reading. One day I came home and I asked myself, I looked for my books, my box of books. I had a whole box full. I never did learn arithmetic, really learned it. I could do short division, long division. I done it my own way. I can do fractions, but in my own way. I've figured men who had gone to high school, finished high school, my buddies out in the desert. I give them a problem, maybe something that had happened to me that I had done, and they started writing, he and his brother-in-law, Chris Munson, and Sheriff Bradshaw. They started figuring with pencils, and I figured in my head, and I gave them the answer. They couldn't believe it. They went, keep going through it, and they finally said, how'd you figure it out? Simple. My way. And, so I asked my sister, where's my books? Mama Petra burned them. Why? What? She burned them. Why? She said, you're going to go crazy reading all the time. My father, when he pulled me out of school, said, you know enough. You can read and write. You can figure. Well, I could measure land, an acre of land. I know how many square feet or yards an acre had. I could measure that. I learned how to measure. For instance, we had a triangle. A piece of an acre, say 20 acres. And here was a triangle, a fence come across here. So I'd measure this and measure this. Or I'd measure this from here to here. No, here to here, and then here to here, and multiply it by this, or vice versa, and then divide it. Well, then I'd do the same thing with this. Cut off here, measure. Then add this to this, and this one would be square. That's the way I figured out my own self. I started figuring things out. So we had to hire men to thin the beach, to hoe the beach. In top beats, we get paid them, but they were paid by the day or the ton. And but the sugar factory would loan us the money for the seed. We couldn't buy the seed from outside, even if we had cash. We had to borrow the money to pay the thinners. We had to borrow the money for the hoers and the toppers, and they charged us interest from November 1st to November 1st. Interest on the money they borrowed. So we were working for the sugar company and the landowner. The landowner got a quarter of whatever we could raise. Well, at the end of 8 years of farming sugar beets, I left home with one suit of clothes, two suits of working clothes, one pair of work shoes, one pair of dress shoes, one dress hat, one old battered work hat, and work clothes, and 5 cents in my pocket. That's all I got out of 8 years of working. And I told my father, I'm not farming any more beets. I'm leaving. Oh, I guess I was a little bit foolish. I said the state was farming for a while because during that war, the farmers made a lot of money. Well, I went to construction, looking for construction work, something else. And that same year is when I saw my wife the first time, 1918. First part of 1918, I met my wife. She was she was born the 29th yesterday, 1917, and I met her in January or February in 1918. I carried that woman in my arms when she was a baby. She was 8, she promised she'd marry me by 8. I never get there. When I first saw her, after 9 years or so, saw her from the top of a freight train. Beautiful, she was a beautiful girl. I fell in love. I never had fallen in love. I was looking for that one woman. A lone wolf all the time. That's where a lot of things my dad taught me, told me about, and I'd ask questions about, and there's this Indian. And in fact, he'd get tired of me asking so many questions. Juanito, you ask too darn many questions, he'd say it in Spanish. Well, I want to learn. Well, just keep your eyes open and your ears open and watch people do things, and you can learn without asking questions. You learn better. It's slower, but you learn better. Well, my dad, one day, we were walking behind me, he reached down and he could smell this weed. That's fish weed, we call it. That's what the Indians, the Opatas, over in the river, and would catch fish. Dump them. And I did it. But, several, good many years later, I was 32, 34. Since I was 8 years, 8 or 9, when he showed me this weed. And it grows all over Wilmington, back in the back, lots, a lot of it. Banning, I don't know what they call it in English, but he blues it and saw a lot of it in the water, and the fish begin to turn belly up and get drunk. So, well, that's where I caught fish when I went, made that trip. Well,
let me ask a question. You started out telling me about your stepmother had burned your books. What year was that?
Well, that would be about the following year I left. I was, this was 1912. Yeah, 1913. My father then scolding me unjustly, and I had warned him that I needed certain tools to be sharpened plowshares. And then he didn't pay no attention or forgot something. He came in scolding me because I was leaving raw land. I was supposed to be plowing 14, 15 inches deep, and the plow would cut up, you know, no points. He started bawling me out, and he was harsh when he bawled me out. And I told him, it's your own darn fault. I ordered you, asked you to get me some plowshares 3 days ago. I had no plowshares, and this is what I'm doing. And I said, it's your fault, not my fault. Well, if you don't like my way, you can leave. Okay, I said, I'll leave tomorrow. After I said it, I was scared. What am I going to do? The month of October, November, no work. And I was a green farm kid. Food. Next morning, I thought to myself that night, he took care of the horses. My chores usually at home, the home ranch. And my sister was very quiet. I thought to myself, he wakes me up. 3 o'clock in the morning, he'd say, come on, time to feed those horses. He'd get up with me, he'd drink coffee while I was harnessing, feeding and harnessing. He'd go harness his team. This time he didn't wake me. He went and took care of his team. I went out to the barn and saw my team standing still. Okay. I had my breakfast. He was working with the horse and I took off. And my coat, that's all I had. No money. Stopped in Artesia, in the town over here. And a man who used to work for us every year around the farm, you know, sugar beets. I known him in quite a few years. A Mexican fella. And I borrowed, should have borrowed at least $5. I did borrow $2. I got on a streetcar, one of those red cars that I was telling you about. Rode all the way to Compton. From Compton, I switched over to San Pedro. I wanted to go to sea. When I ended up in San Pedro, looking around for, I run into watching the fishermen there, Portuguese, and I don't know what other races there were there, Italian, I guess. And one of them was drinking, a big, heavy. And he came over and he started pushing me around, bawling me out. I stayed out of the way. They were working on nets and whatever. And I don't know what he was telling. He started cussing me in his language. He was drinking, I know. And then another big husky come along. Well, when you start talking, bawling him out in his, their language, Portuguese, I guess they were. Well, they got into it, and this other guy picked this guy up and threw him in the bay. Then he turned around and he kicked me in the hiney. He says, "Get on, come away, kid, come away. Come away, you make trouble, go on." So I got out of there, and there's no place for me. I walked across the old bridge, P.E. bridge, that used to open and close for ships in, I forget what, West Bay, I think they call it. West Bay or West Harbor. And I'm almost at the end of the bridge when the watchman came running on. "Hey," he says, "you're not supposed to walk on this bridge." It was too late. It was almost the end, so I run. I knew he wasn't going to leave the bridge. I came through Wilmington, I don't remember, but that old goof house that the kids call. I don't remember anything else except getting out of town and running into swamps. And a truck came along and he picked me up, gave me a ride. And I asked him questions. I wanted to get into Los Angeles. We had some friends in Los Angeles that used to go every year and work for us in the fields, Tinning Beach and Pointing Beach. And the oldest boy was, I don't know, 18, 19, I guess. I know he was kind of sweet on my sister. My sister was only 14 then. But they were from Texas. The old daddy was. Anyway. And this youngster, all he knew was cowboy. I remember he had small feet. He couldn't walk very far. He was used to riding, that's all, since he was a little boy. Well, I finally ended up at these people's place. They were way in East Los Angeles, in Mexico, side of town. And they accepted me in right away. The old man started asking me questions. And anyway, the next day I went out with the boys. I said, there was three boys. One was a nephew of the old man. And he took to me right away. We'd been buddies when he was working for us. And Sundays we'd go hunting, chasing rabbits. And he took me in, put me under his arm more or less, and I asked him about work. He says the Japanese are hiring over to thin lettuce. Well, I used to two rows on a bank, on a ridge. 75 cents a row. The best I could do was two rows. Nobody else could make two rows. Well, I'd been used to thinning beets. So
let's stop here. Continue then the next time we come back with and do another tape then just on your, what is it, 20 years that you spent on the road?
On the road? Well, we can, thing something happened to me that taught me something, made me hate that city of Los Angeles. I swore I'd never live in Los Angeles because I got mixed up with them. This other youngster that took me under his wing had me mixed up with some crooked kids. He wanted me to go steal a bicycle, or they beat me up. And one kid tried, I beat him, I whipped him. And then another one, I whipped him. Then they were going to sick another big 16, 17-year-old. Big, husky, mean-looking. Mostly Mexican kids, but there was a few Anglos there. The boss, the head man was the boss, about 18. And he's having these kids steal all this stuff. They showed me a cellar just loaded with bicycles, and I don't know, they even had a broken down buggy. And my assignment to join this out, I was going to join a group, a club, was to go steal a bicycle from a front porch. I would not steal them. They were going to beat me up. But this boy, a buddy of mine, he pulled a knife out. He said, "Nah," he says, "he'd be whipped too already." "Well, he don't talk." "No, he don't talk. He talk, I cut his throat." That's the way he spoke. He's English. So they let me go. Well, I was there a week, enough to earn to pay for my board, which wasn't much. But the daddy of the one sent the oldest boy back to my home to find out what was wrong. He came back on a Saturday. And he said, "Your father wants you home." He says, "They asked you to go home. Tell him for me to tell you that the horses are waiting for you." I wanted to go home because I knew things were tough, hard. I'd heard the old man speaking. He wasn't about to be feeding me there, you know, something like that. He was telling his wife. and I overheard it, and I was nowhere else to go. But I gave him what little money I could, and I got a haircut, I remember. Had enough to pay that railroad I was telling that goes out of Los Angeles through Luna Park. I rode it. We lived at Carmelita, near Carmelita. And